of 100 prizes from Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Here are the basic rules for the Keep in Touch with Salem online contest. The Keep in Touch with Salem contest is open to any legal resident 13 years of age or older who signs up to receive a Talk Radio 860 WGUL newsletter at 860WGUL.com between March 15, 2010 and April 30, 2010. 100 winners will be selected by random drawing to be held May 5, 2010 at 12 noon from among all eligible entries received. The first 91 winners will receive a $25 American Express gift card. The 92nd through 96th winners will receive an Apple iPod Classic approximate retail value $230. The 97th through 99th winners will receive a Dell Inspiron Mini Netbook approximate retail value $400. And the 100th winner will receive a Sony Bravia 52-inch flat-screen television approximate retail value $1,500. For complete rules and prize details, visit Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Good luck from all of us at Talk Radio 860 WGUL and 860WGUL.com.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening once again. Today, we are tackling myeloma with guest expert Dr. Melissa Alcina of Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women and 5,000 of education last year, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And we had a great showing yesterday at the Tampa Convention Center for our fifth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. As I've shared with you in weeks leading up to the event, we had 22 seminars, including a seminar on financial wellness. We had 8 different fitness classes. We had healthcare screenings and chair massages. And it was a great opportunity. And I've got to tell you, I was constantly being approached and by women thanking us for putting this event on, to giving them the opportunity to learn about their medical problems for themselves and their families, and giving them that feeling of empowerment that, yes, they can make a difference by receiving this important life-changing information. Education is unique in that it can give you and does give you the immediate impact on your well-being. So I feel blessed and grateful that we're able to continue yet again yesterday in our fifth year to provide this service to you, the community, and we hope to continue to do so in the future. Please, those of you that are listening that were there yesterday, feel free to email me your comments. We've received a host of different comments on the questionnaires. I have yet to be able to review everything. But those that have not been able to submit, please go online, focusonfemales.com, and share your experience, comments, suggestions, future topics, not just pertaining to the symposium, but also for this radio show. We're a reflection of you and what you are looking to learn about. Okay, as we turn to today's show, first I want to welcome Dr. Alcina. It's great to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
And so Dr. Alcina, Melissa Alcina, is an associate professor of medicine at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute in Tampa, Florida, and a faculty of the Blood Marrow Transplant Program, where she leads the myeloma bone marrow transplant section. Dr. Alcina earned her medical degree from the University of Puerto Rico School of Medicine. She completed her residency in internal medicine at the San Juan VA Hospital in Puerto Rico, and a fellowship in hematology and medical oncology at the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, where she was an assistant professor of medicine and in the section of hematology, oncology, and bone marrow transplantation between 1996 and 2000. Currently and throughout her career, Dr. Alcina's clinical and research interests have focused on evaluating the role of new therapies in multiple myeloma. She's been the principal investigator in over 30 myeloma clinical trials at Moffitt Cancer Center and is also performing translational research elucidating the mechanisms of drug resistance in this disease. Dr. Alcina is currently a member of the American Society of Hematology, the NCCN Myeloma Panel. What's NCCN?
National Cancer Center Guidelines.
Okay. National Cancer Center Myeloma Panel, the Multiple Myeloma Research Consortium, and several multiple myeloma advisory boards. At Moffitt, she is a member of the Protocol Scientific Review Committee, the Institutional Review Board, the Medical Executive Committee, and Hispanic Advisory Council. Dr. Alcina is the author of more than 35 journal articles and book chapters. She's published in prestigious journals including Blood, Bone Marrow Transplantation, British Journal of Hematology, International Journal of Hematology, the New England Journal of Medicine, and Journal of Clinical Oncology. Dr. Alcina also participates in the development and direction of patient educational symposiums in cancer and co-directs the Hispanic initiatives to better serve the Hispanic patient population at Moffitt. And so we encourage your phone calls today on myeloma as well as the perhaps more common condition called MGUS. And we'll get into what these two conditions. But first, I want to encourage, again, each of you to contact us, call us with your questions, and we are at 289-1860, 289-1860, or toll-free anywhere else. Now, this program is streaming live online, so if you're out of the local area, you can call us toll-free at 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600, and locally, 289-1860. So, Melissa, let's start at the beginning. Myeloma, would you define it for our audience?
Yes. Multiple myeloma is a cancer of plasma cells. And plasma cells are cells that we all have in our body. They're part of our immune system. And their normal function is to produce antibodies or proteins to help us deal with infections. And so these cells, like any other cell in the body, can start growing without control. We don't know exactly what triggers, you know, that growth. But when it does, then these cells grow. And instead of being 5% of the cells in the bone marrow, which is the inside of the bone where all the cells of the blood are formed, then they can become, you know, 30%, 80%, 90%. And then they grow in the bone marrow, and then they cannot perform their normal function, which is help, you know, deal with infections and so on.
So and I'm getting ahead of ourselves, I know, but sometimes a clinical presentation would be that of recurrent infection?
Right. The most common clinical presentations would be, number one, anemia or low red blood cells, because these cells are growing in the bone marrow. So now the bone marrow, will, where the red blood cells are formed, cannot perform the normal function.
Like they're being squeezed out by these ongoing proliferative abnormal cell line.
Right. Right. And then the other thing that is very characteristic of myeloma is bone disease. About 80% of the patients, actually, their initial complaint is bone pain. And the reason for this is because these cells, you know, they grow inside of the bone marrow and they induce bone destruction, actually, and bone damage. So the bones become very weak. So frequently myeloma patients present with what we call bone lesions, which means that there are areas of the bone that have lost their calcium and they're very weak. And they can have fractures, they can have bone pain, they can have high calcium in the blood.
Okay, so, all right, so it does lead to increased fractures. Is there a preference for which part of our skeletal system, certain bones that are more prone to develop these lesions in myeloma, or can it affect any part of your skeletal system?
Well, the lesions can actually occur in any bone because they're pockets of this of bone marrow in any bone. And actually, if you look in a medical book and about myeloma, probably the picture that they're going to show is the skull with multiple lytic lesions. But interestingly, the lesions in the skull are not of any clinical significance. Really, when weight-bearing bones are involved, that's when the complications can come. Mm-hmm. So frequently, you know, the back patients can have, like, compression fractures in the vertebral bodies or the long bones, you know, like the femurs, you know, the thigh bones, the arms. And in myeloma, you know, many of my patients would come saying, for example, that they were opening a jar and their arm broke.
Really?
Or they, you know, very simple motion because the bones are actually very, very weak.
So to twist off the top of a jar and their upper arm, their humerus could break, could fracture.
Yes.
Wow, so that's minimal torsion on that upper bone.
Right, right. Obviously, when you look at at that x-ray, you're going to see that there's, you know, that the bone in that area is almost gone, that there must be a big lesion there where these plasma cells are growing.
Mm-hmm. And so these lytic lesions, as you describe them, which is representative of loss of calcium and bone material, does that represent replacement of healthy bone by these myeloma cells?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. When the disease was first described, it wasn't a patient that complained of bone pain. When they did x-rays, they saw these lytic lesions, and when they did a biopsy of one of those lytic lesions, it was just replaced by these plasma cells.
Mm-hmm. All right. So even though the abnormal cell of origin may come from a long bone, you can find these lytic lesions throughout. So these cells can metastasize like other cancers that our listeners are familiar with, or is it a different mechanism here?
Well, the plasma cells preferentially live in the bone marrow because actually they like the bone marrow microenvironment. The bone marrow sort of feeds these plasma cells.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't call that exactly metastasis because in reality we have, again, pockets of bone marrow in all the bones. So this is where they normally would live anyway. Mm. They grow there. Now, in advanced cases of the disease, these cells can actually get out of the bone and start growing in the organs, like, for example, in the lungs or in the liver.
So in advanced disease, they can metastasize?
Exactly. And then in that case, we would say that.
This is fascinating then. What causes, for example, can you pinpoint then the bone of origin? In other words, if it's in the long bone of the leg, the femur, for example, and yet the patient also has lytic lesions in the skull, is it that you have a number of areas in your skeletal system that are changing simultaneously? Is that what the present thinking is? Or
Yes. I mean, it's not that it originates in one particular bone. It originates in the bone marrow.
So it's almost like the entire bone marrow is somehow being influenced and changing its differentiation or its maturation.
Definitely.
Is that safe to say that?
Yeah, well, I think it's that you have to think of the bone marrow as an organ.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know,
like one continuous organ.
Exactly, like one continuous organ. So whatever is happening in the bone marrow of your femur is the same process that is happening in the bone marrow of your skull.
Well, that's fascinating. That's so. Another, so there may be some kind of, and I'm completely being extemporaneous here. I have no idea as to whether this is true or not. But it's almost like it is subjected to some kind of abnormal maturation process. Normal influence? Could there be some kind of circulating chemical or that the body makes to alter its the differentiation of these cells?
Well, I mean, we really don't know very well what causes myeloma, even though, yes, we know there are several proteins in the body that can actually induce the growth of the myeloma. For example, mm-hmm. just to mention something, interleukin-6, which mm-hmm. is a protein that we all have in the body in myeloma patients, can be increased in amounts, and it can induce the growth of the myeloma cells. But it's a very complex process, and in trying to identify what is the actual protein or gene or product that is inducing the growth of these cancer cells, actually it's quite complex and heterogeneous.
But it's fascinating that it can affect the entire bony structure throughout the body.
Right. So it's not like, you know, in other diseases, there's some leukemias, for example, that you have one gene abnormality mm-hmm. causes the disease. In myeloma, it's very heterogeneous. And actually, in the patients, it manifests also that way. It's a very heterogeneous disease. So some patients will have a very indolent, slow-growing disease that sometimes doesn't even need therapy. And some patients will have a very advanced form of that disease requiring very aggressive therapy.
So one question I sometimes ask is, what type of myeloma do I have?
Right, so that is actually very important. As I mentioned before, the normal function of these plasma cells is to produce proteins or antibodies. Another name for that is immunoglobulins, and there are many different types of immunoglobulins, like immunoglobulin G. We abbreviate that IG. So if a patient is looking at their blood work, they're going to see IgG, IgA, IgM. And so when these cells are growing, because it's a cancer, there's just one cell that got bad and started growing, so they're normally are going to produce only one type of immunoglobulin. So a patient will have either IgG myeloma or IgA myeloma, or sometimes they make a different type of protein that is a very small protein that we call them light chains, because they're very small, and actually they're very small and they can be filtered in the kidney, so normally we can measure that protein in the urine.
Just the light chain ones.
The light chain one, yeah. Okay. But the reason that is very important, and I always tell my patients, if you're going to remember anything from our discussion, remember this, because that measurement of that protein is the best marker of the disease. So in other words, if I know I have IgG myeloma and I know what my IgG level is when I was diagnosed, I should see that coming down to normal as I get therapy. Mm-hmm. And if you go to your doctor and you want to know if your disease is, you know, if your treatment is working or not, you should ask your doctor, why is my IgG or my, you know, the protein that is involved in your particular case.
Now, the light chains are filtered in the kidney, so those patients we follow with follow-up urine specimens?
We follow those patients with 24-hour urine collection to be able to measure this light chain, you know, how much light chains are excreted in 24 hours. Recently, there's a new test that we can measure these light chains in the serum, and we call that serum-free light chain. But that is, it doesn't replace the need for having to do this 24-hour urine collection.
Mm-hmm. How about for IgG, IgA, and IgM myelomas? Those have to be monitored by repeated blood testing, I imagine.
Right. Those we can measure in the blood.
Because they do not get filtered in the through the kidney.
Yeah, sometimes... Some of it can be filtered in the kidneys, because actually 25% of myeloma patients will have kidney damage because of these proteins being deposited in the kidney. So sometimes the kidney structure is not normal and they can spill some of these proteins.
But safest to check the blood.
Yes. But the most accurate measurement in those cases would be the blood.
Does the nature of the myeloma protein, whether it be IgG, IgA, or IgM, dictate the clinical profile of the patient?
Somewhat. There's some studies saying that patients that have IgA myeloma have a slightly worse prognosis.
But nothing's definitive here.
Nothing too definitive. And then the other thing that could happen, IgA, these proteins actually circulate in the blood as dimers. Like instead of a single protein, they bind. And so it's two proteins in the blood.
Kind of hooked together.
So they can make the blood. It's more likely that a patient with IgA myeloma, if they have very high levels of IgA, the blood can become like thick.
Like viscous.
Right, like viscous. Mm. And then...
strokes. I'm hearing strokes.
Or, you know, those patients can have blurry vision, headaches because of the high protein in the blood.
And in the back of the eye and the retinal vasculature can become obstructed. Then we're looking at retinal vein occlusions and blindness.
Right.
And I imagine the same process can occur in the coronary arteries with potential increase of myocardial infarction, heart attacks.
Right.
So this is, okay, so these are very important, obviously, to diagnose and have careful monitoring of this condition when you have it. And how often do you monitor this monoclonal protein, the IgG, IgA, or IgM?
Well, it depends on the individual patient, but, you know, you do this as part of the initial workup that you do in a patient that you suspect that has myeloma. And if a patient is getting therapy, is being actively treated, we do those on a monthly basis. If a patient is just being monitored, disease, let's say, is in remission, then we do it every 3 months.
Every 3 months, okay.
But it varies a lot. I mean, according to the individual patient and how the condition is in that particular patient.
And how is this disease staged?
So that's a very important question because, as I mentioned before, myeloma can be very different from patient to patient, and not everyone needs therapy at diagnosis. So once we make the diagnosis, which we make showing that these plasma cells are increased in the bone marrow when we do a bone marrow biopsy, then we do a staging. The most common staging system that we use right now is called the International Staging System, and we measure a protein in the blood that is called beta-2 microglobulin, and we measure also the normal protein in the blood that is albumin that we all have, and there's stage 1, 2, and 3. And when someone has a very high beta-2 microglobulin and a low albumin, then that would be a more advanced stage.
And that's true no matter what the monoclonal protein is that's being secreted?
Independent of the monoclonal protein, right. But once we stage, you know, we know what the staging is, which that has prognostic importance, then we try to see if the patient has symptoms or not. And we use an acronym that we call CRABBY.
And
CRABBY, the C stands for calcium,
having
high calcium in the blood because of the bone disease. The R for renal or kidney disease. The A for anemia, which is low red blood cells. The B for bone disease. And the I for infections, frequent infections.
Mm. How about bruising with the replacement of the bone marrow? Does the platelet cell line get impacted?
Interestingly, no. Usually the platelets in myeloma are normal and sometimes even elevated.
Do we know why?
A potential mechanism could be that, as I mentioned before, this protein interleukin-6 is elevated in myeloma patients. Interleukin-6 is a cytokine that stimulates megakaryocytes, cells in the bone marrow that make the platelets.
So the same thing that's causing the myeloma cells to act funny, possibly, or is actually protecting the platelet cell line or actually causing them to grow, proliferate.
Right. And that is in regular myeloma. Sometimes when myeloma is very advanced, particularly in a patient that has had myeloma for a long time, then we can see, the white cells and also the platelets affected. But it's not a common characteristic of the disease at diagnosis.
One more question before we go to break. Is there a family history or predilection to get this disease, genetic factors?
No, there have been some reports of some family clusters. However, the most common, the thought in myeloma, the risk factors are mainly environmental, like exposure to chemicals, benzenes, Agent Orange, for example, from some of the veterans. And the incidence, for example, in myeloma is increased among farmers that work with these pesticides all the time. It has to be obviously a very
chronic
and strong exposure. Usually when we see clusters of people in the same neighborhood or same family, we think more of there must have been common exposure, right, in that particular area.
How about radiation?
Radiation, definitely.
How about, yeah. I mean, do pilots have an increased risk of developing this due to the cosmic radiation?
No.
Okay, not known? Okay.
Not that I know.
All right. Now's the time to consider your questions. Call in with your questions. We are at 289-1860. That's 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it is toll-free, 877-969-8600. We're talking about myeloma and MGUS. MGUS, call in with your questions. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. When it comes to sounding the alarms about President Obama and his agenda, no one does it better than my friend Sean Hannity. Sean has just finished his first new book in 6 years called Conservative Victory. It's a stirring call to action for every conservative. And when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine, you can get Sean Hannity's new book as your free gift. The Town Hall Magazine is loaded with must-read stories about the conservative renaissance in America every single month. To get yours, log on to townhallmagazine.com. That's townhallmagazine.com.
The yeas are 220, the nays are 211.
Whether the American people want it or not, it's going to happen.
The bill is passed.
The House has voted yes on health care reform.
Shame on us. Shame on this body.
How will this bill affect the American people?
This is a program for the middle class.
And how will this affect the elections in November?
Very spirited campaign coming up between now and November.
Now, more than ever, we're your sounding board.
This is what change looks like.
Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Dr. Steve Maskin, and with me is Dr. Melissa Alcina from Moffitt Cancer Center here in Tampa, Florida, and we are tackling myeloma. And with us is Jerry. Jerry, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell us, Jerry, and again, I've got Dr. Alcina here with me. If you'd like to say hello.
Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Dr. Alcina. How are you?
Doing good. And you?
I'm doing very well. I'm getting ready to celebrate my granddaughter's 4th birthday today.
Congratulations, and thank you for being with us on a Sunday. Tell us, Jerry, if you will, when you were first diagnosed, and you are a patient of Dr. Alcina's, when were you first diagnosed with myeloma?
I was diagnosed Father's Day weekend of 2005. Prior to that, I had started showing symptoms, but being a typical male, I ignored the symptoms, thinking it was something else. And
what were your symptoms, Jerry?
Well, I was weak. I was losing weight rapidly. My normal body weight was around 215, 220. I was a bodybuilder, weightlifter, and was trying to lose a few pounds, but it just started going down a little too rapidly. My skin color was changing.
In what way? In what way, Jerry?
I was going from a healthy color to basically almost gray. Just,
okay, you know, pale.
A very sickly-looking color, and my wife convinced me, along some friends, to go to a doctor. You know, cut to the chase, they did x-rays and MRI. An oncologist in Vero Beach on the East Coast said, "We're sorry to tell you, but you have multiple myeloma, and we're going to refer you to Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa." And that's how I connect with Dr. Alcina.
How long did these, have these symptoms been progressing before it was decided to seek medical attention?
Probably about 2-3 months where it started really getting noticeable.
So it didn't happen overnight. It was a, I guess we'd call it more of a subacute or a type of profile. And you had, up until this time, you were, had normal, healthy condition.
Right. I was, up until that time, I was experiencing some severe back pain. And what had happened, I had had some stress fractures from the multiple myeloma, which I did not know at that time that I had.
When did you have the stress fractures diagnosed?
The stress fractures were diagnosed probably about 2 weeks before the actual diagnosis of multiple myeloma.
Okay, so again, this, so suggesting that everything was progressing.
Yeah, it was just progressing along. Okay. It was just kind of like a chain effect. Things were just, you know, changing rapidly.
Right. And what kind of, if I may ask, what kind of work did you do?
Well, for years I traveled with a team of athletes called Strike Force and another team called the Power Team, powerlifters, bodybuilders. We spoke in schools and churches, did anti-drug and alcohol, positive self-esteem, school assemblies.
Okay.
I'm an ordained minister, been in ministry for this year, celebrating 21 years.
Okay, congratulations. And and there's no one in, no family history of any cancers?
The only person in my family that had cancer was my brother, but his, it was totally unrelated. He had a tumor in his stomach, which was diagnosed as, I don't know the name of it, but it was some type of stomach cancer.
All right, so tell us what happened then when you went to, when you were diagnosed with the x-rays and the MRIs, and as Dr. Alcina mentioned, I'm sure they did blood tests and found the type of myeloma you have. Do you remember what type of myeloma that would, that is?
Multiple myeloma.
Does, do you have a, do you know if you're IgG, IgA, or IgM?
IgA. I think she could answer that better. I mean, all those numbers and letters start to run together.
All right. Have you had any visual symptoms during this? Did you have any visual abnormalities or blurriness during this this time? Okay.
No, my eyesight was relatively normal. For a 42-year-old man, I was relatively normal, other than, you know, needing glasses that, you know, most of us will wind up someday needing. But
sure.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay. And so tell us about what happened when you met Dr. Alcina and, at Moffitt Cancer Center. How did they, what was the course of therapy and additional diagnostic tests if you had a bone marrow, for example, and so forth?
Well, I had the bone marrow biopsy done at Indian River Medical Center in Vero Beach.
Okay.
Those results were sent over to Dr. Alcina's office. And, you know, our first visit was basically, you know, find out, you know, what the course of treatment was going to be.
Okay.
And the treatment was going to be a tandem stem cell transplant, which was completely foreign to me. Had no idea. In fact, I had never heard of multiple myeloma up to that point.
A tandem stem cell transplant. Well, I'm sure our listeners haven't heard about that before either. So, Dr. Alcina, would you comment on that?
Yes, that is Yes, it's an autologous bone marrow transplant, meaning that we use the patient's own cells.
Okay.
Patients get, we first collect the stem cells from the patient, then we treat the patients with high doses of chemotherapy that are going to be more effective getting rid of the myeloma, but they're also going to kill the normal stem cells. But then we rescue the bone marrow, giving the cells that we had collected back. So those cells, because they're out of the body, they're not exposed to the chemo, and we can give them back to rescue the bone marrow. So that is an autologous transplant. And what Jerry is referring as a tandem autologous transplant, it means that we do two transplants back-to-back within 3 to 6 months of each other. Mm. So in myeloma, patients that have resistant disease at diagnosis, that they do not respond very well to the initial therapy, then we recommend that they get tandem transplant. So that was Jerry's case.
Here's my question. When you collect the stem cells from these patients for the autologous, where you're basically going to replace or use their own cells to help them, to treat them, how do you ensure that the cells that you collect, the stem cells you collect, are not abnormal stem cells? Do the normal stem cells respond to the agents preferentially compared to the abnormal stem cells to enable you to collect them preferentially?
The simple answer to your question is that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So when a patient is initially diagnosed with myeloma, yes, the bone marrow is going to be replaced by the myeloma cells. Mm-hmm. But we don't take those patients immediately to transplant. We first treat them for a few months, usually 6 to 8 months, mm-hmm. of therapy. So we're cleaning the bone marrow in vivo, no? By the treatment that we give the patients.
And what is that treatment? What do you use before the actual stem cell?
Well, actually, the treatment of myeloma has changed dramatically over mm-hmm. the years. So what Jerry received back mm-hmm. when he was diagnosed is not what we're giving at this point. It's mm-hmm. amazingly. We have two very good drugs that have been recently approved, and now we're using those drugs in combination with all chemotherapy agents.
Okay.
So I can tell you the ideal treatment when a patient is diagnosed is not known, but in the majority of myeloma centers, we're doing clinical trials mm-hmm. to evaluate combinations of therapies. And with these new regimens, combining the novel agents with the old chemotherapy, we're getting response rates in over 90% of
wow.
the patients. And but the important thing is that it's not only making a patient respond, which would mean that the protein is going to go down, mm-hmm. But actually we're getting very good quality responses. So many patients getting what we call a complete remission, which means that there's no evidence of disease.
There's no monoclonal detected at all.
No monoclonal detected at all. The bone marrow is normal. And we know that the patients that achieve that prior to transplant are the ones that are going to benefit more from transplant.
So that can happen before, without the transplant?
Yes.
So you're saying your therapy now has progressed to the point where more patients do not need stem cell transplants?
No, we don't know that. Mm-hmm. We don't know that. The before, with the old therapies, like the therapy that Jerry got, mm-hmm. The percent of patients that would go into complete remission was about 3 to 5%. So very low. So in the majority of the patients, transplant was an automatic thing because with transplant, then we would get complete remissions in maybe 30% of the patients. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, with the new therapies, we're able to get complete remissions with induction therapy in about 40% of the patients.
Okay.
And that percent is further escalated when you take the patients to transplant.
Okay.
So then the use of transplant myeloma was established because there were randomized studies that showed transplant to be better than standard chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. But now with the novel therapies, really no study have been done yet comparing transplant to the novel therapy. So that question that you just asked, we don't know the answer. But, you know, the studies that have shown novel therapies followed by transplant, those patients are definitely doing much better.
Is that where it achieves a 90 percentile response?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And what, just for our listeners, what are some of the names of these new novel therapies?
So there are two main new therapies. One is called bortezomib, is the generic name, but the commercial name is Velcade.
How do you spell that?
Velcade, V-E-L-C-A-D-E.
Velcade, okay.
Uh-huh. And the other drug is called lenalidomide, or Revlimid. It's Revlimid. You You might be familiar with a drug that is called thalidomide, which is a drug that was taken out of the market in the 60s because of the birth defects.
That's
thalidomide is a drug that is very active in myeloma. In fact, I'm not sure. Did you receive thalidomide, Jerry?
Yes, I received thalidomide.
Initially, right?
Yeah, initially I did, and it was working for me, but at one point it stopped, or clinical terms, refractive. You know, it's scary when you can watch TV shows like House and you start to know all the medical terms.
Yeah, so Jerry, for example, he got thalidomide and dexamethasone for when he was initially diagnosed, and he wasn't responding ideally, and that's why we decided he needed two transplants.
Right.
But Revlimid, this new drug, is a derivative of thalidomide.
Okay.
And that's, so at this point, we're no longer using thalidomide as often. Mm-hmm. We're more using Revlimid-based regimens if we're going to go use that type of drug for induction.
Okay. All right. All right, so Jerry, now, so you had your tandem stem cell transplants, and that was, I imagine, back in the 05, 06 period?
Yeah. The transplants were, the first one was in February of 06, and the second one was in June of 06.
Okay, and then tell us your course after the transplants.
Basically, the course after the transplants was just pretty much monitoring to see what was, you know, blood counts. I was receiving, and still do receive, every 3 months a bone builder. It's called Iridia, or there's another name for it, Zometa. Could think
what,
for a second.
What does that do, Melissa? This Zometa, the bone builder?
So, you know, is that is what Jerry's referring to is a bisphosphonate.
Bisphosphonate, okay, so basically
so like Fosamax, for example,
right.
But these are...
It helps incorporate calcium into the bone?
It inhibits bone resorption.
Okay.
So, and these are like newer generations, like compared to Fosamax, for example, like Zometa that he mentioned and Iridia.
But patients with osteoporosis use this too, correct?
In fact, yeah. Zometa has been approved for osteoporosis, and but they use, I think they gave the patients a dose once a year because they're very strong bisphosphonate. In myeloma, patients get this on a monthly basis.
Frequently. And Jerry, how quickly did you have resolution of your symptoms? How quickly did the color return to you, starting to maintain your weight, perhaps even increase it and gain your strength? How soon during your course?
Well, to back up just a little bit, in February of 06, before
the first one,
first transplant, I had to. I underwent a procedure called kyphoplasty, where they repaired the damage from the bone fractures, which was, I had three of those done, which was really a blessing in disguise because it took pressure off the nerves in my back. So, you know, relieved the pain. It was going to make it much easier for me to go through the transplants. But after the first transplant, I responded quite well. In fact, I went into remission, which, from my understanding, that does not happen as often as they would like, but we went ahead and did the second one. I had some complications, which, you know, when you're going through chemotherapy, that's all, you know, that's always the risk you take is some, you know, different complications. Mm-hmm. But after we treated, Dr. Alcina treated those complications, I started getting better, little by little, progressed from, I was at one point in a wheelchair, then progressed from using the wheelchair to a walking cane for balance. And then within probably about 4 months, I was back to walking as normal as I could. And today I work out in the gym. I use the elliptical stepper for 30 minutes. I can actually I can run on a treadmill. I don't running on a road, but I run on the treadmill for quite a distance.
How old are you, Jerry?
Have no back pain. Everything's good.
How old are you?
I am 47.
Okay. Do you have any questions or of Dr. Alcina at this point, or any comments before we resume our other part of our show, our radio show?
Well, my comments is, if you're going through your going through treatments is that, you know, don't give up. There's always hope. Mm-hmm. I have a strong belief in God. God is not just somebody, you know, just out there. But I have a strong belief in God the Father and God the Son. And I believe that he is the healer, but I also believe that he uses physicians, doctors, to help us heal. Use nutrition. You know, I've always had a pretty good diet, and after my doctors got through with me, I had an even better diet. Mm-hmm.
That's excellent. Jerry, listen, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and congratulations on, I believe it was your granddaughter's fourth birthday today.
Yes, this afternoon. Celebrating her fourth birthday.
Great. Thanks once again, and have a great afternoon and rest of the week.
Thank you so much, Jerry. See you soon.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, come back with more questions. Call in now. We are at 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, toll-free, 877-969-8600. We're tackling myeloma with guest expert Dr. Melissa Alcina, Moffitt Cancer Center, right here in Tampa. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsborough, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
What are the benefits of being married? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Better health, increased income, and longer life expectancy, to name just a few. This Sunday is Black Marriage Day. It's a day to highlight and promote the positive difference marriage can make in America's African-American community. Recent studies show that over the past four decades, marriage rates among African-Americans have declined, while rates of divorce, separation, cohabitation, and out-of-wedlock births have increased. Black Marriage Day organizers are determined to reverse those trends by celebrating strong marriages and focusing on the benefits that marriage provides. Hear Tony Dungy's take on my More Than a Minute blog at familyminute.com. Remember, your family first.
Want to stay in touch with Mark? You can. Connect with Mark on Facebook. Family tips, great insight, and a sneak peek into Mark's life. The Family Minute with Mark Merrill, keeping you relationally fit, 1 minute at a time.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of of ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today it's Myeloma Day with guest expert Dr. Melissa Alcina, Moffitt Cancer Center, right here in Tampa, Florida. And we've been discussing multiple myeloma and with a guest who is a patient of Dr. Alcina's, giving some explanation, some description of his course and symptoms. Tell me, Melissa, do these patients have any observable chromosomal abnormalities?
Some do. There's not a specific chromosomal abnormality that is characteristic of myeloma, but about 20%, 15-20% of the patients will have an abnormality by, you know, in cytogenetics in the chromosomes. And some of those are associated with a worse prognosis. One that is most commonly described is a deletion of the long arm of chromosome 13.
Chromosome 13.
Yeah, 13q mm-hmm. minus. And then there's some other abnormalities in chromosome 17.
And that may, that again, you mentioned before how some of these patients have been found to have exposure, chemical exposure, benzenes and so forth. Is it felt that the chemical or pesticide exposure can affect the chromosomal health, or is it independent?
Yeah, that really has not been
worked out.
But the bottom line, we do, every time we make a diagnosis of myeloma, when we do the bone marrow, we send those tests to figure out if that patients have those chromosomal abnormalities. The good news is that one of these new drugs that we talked about before, bortezomib or Velcade, seems to be able to overcome the bad prognosis imposed by those abnormalities. So nowadays, that it becomes even more important to figure that out before treatment, because when you see those abnormalities, then you can select the drugs that you are going to give the patient to make sure that they have a better outcome.
Customized care.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We have one more minute to go. Melissa, would you please give an overarching comment or recommendation or message, take-home message for our listeners regarding myeloma?
Well, what I would say is that whenever, you know, if you're diagnosed with this disease, you definitely should seek expert advice. Myeloma is a very rare disease. It's the second most common hematologic malignancy, about 20,000 cases diagnosed each year in the United States. So it's an uncommon disease compared to breast cancer and colon cancer. And things are changing so much in the treatment of myeloma that it's even hard for someone like me, that this is all I do, to keep up with all the new advances and so on. So it's very important that you go to a myeloma center, you find about what are the newest advances, what's going on in terms of clinical research, because that will give the patients the best opportunity.
This is very exciting to hear the progress, and there's some information that we exchanged off show. Just, again, the very exciting progress in the treatment of myeloma. Thank you, Melissa, very much for joining me today. And next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we're going to talk about feet. That's right, women and their feet. Foot issues affecting women with Dr. Michael Sheriff from the USF College of Medicine. In the meantime, this is Dr. Steve Maskin wishing each of you a wonderful and healthy week. We'll see you next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.